Welcome to the BritishBattles.com podcast on the Battle of Gingindlovu, the battle fought on 2nd April 1879 in the Zulu War, at which Lord Chelmsford defeated a Zulu army on his route to overwhelming the Zulu nation at Ulundi. My name is John McKenzie. I am the editor of BritishBattles.com. I write the text for the entries in BritishBattles.com. I also select the illustrations and draft the maps under my nom de carte of John Fawkes. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site for the Battle of Gingindlovu, where you will see a number of illustrations and my map of the battle. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I invite you to send me your comments to info@BritishBattles.com. The Battle of Gingindlovu was fought in eastern Zululand in southern Africa between 5,250 British and Natal colonial troops, commanded by Lieutenant General Lord Chelmsford, and some 11,000 Zulus under their leader, Somofa Kazikhala. The Zulu warriors were formed in regiments by age, their standard equipment, the shield and the stabbing spear. The formation for the attack, described as the horns of the beast, was said to have been devised by Shaka, the Zulu king who established Zulu hegemony in southern Africa. The main body of the army delivered a frontal assault called the loins, while the horns spread out behind each of the enemy's flanks and delivered the secondary and often fatal attack in the enemy's rear. Cetshwayo, the Zulu king, fearing British aggression, took pains to purchase firearms wherever they could be bought. By the outbreak of war, the Zulus had thousands of muskets and rifles, but of a poor standard, and the Zulus were ill-trained in their use. The Zulus captured some 1,000 Martini Henry breech-loading rifles and a large amount of ammunition at the Battle of Isandlwana. These rifles were used in the subsequent battles fought by the Zulus against the British, including the Battle of Gingindlovu. The regular British infantry were equipped with the breech-loading single-shot Martini Henry rifle and bayonet. The British infantry wore red tunics, white solar topi helmets and dark blue trousers, with red piping down the side. The irregular mounted units wore blue tunics and slouch hats. Lord Chelmsford's army won the Battle of Gingindlovu decisively. The British regiments at the Battle of Gingindlovu were the Royal Artillery, the 3rd Regiment, the Buffs, now the Princess of Wales's Royal Regiment, the 57th Regiment, later the Middlesex Regiment, and now the Princess of Wales's Royal Regiment, the 3rd Battalion of the 60th Rifles, later the King's Royal Rifle Corps, and now the Rifles, the 91st Highlanders, later the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and now the Royal Regiment of Scotland, and the 99th Regiment, later the Wiltshire Regiment, and now the Rifles. The Zulu War was among the most savage of Britain's colonial wars. The Battle of Isandlwana saw the massacre of a battalion of British infantry, the 1st Battalion of the 24th Foot. At the Battle of Rorke's Drift, 140 British troops slew 500 Zulus with their breech-loading rifles, firing from inside the fortified post. At the Battle of Kambula, Evelyn Wood's column killed 2,000 Zulus with its volley fire and probably mortally wounded a further 1,000. Following the disaster of Isandlwana, the British government rushed reinforcements to Natal. 2 regiments of cavalry, 2 batteries of Royal Artillery guns, and 5 battalions of infantry. At the end of March 1879, Colonel Pearson's No. 1 column lay isolated in a fortified position at Eshawa, deep in eastern Zululand. Lord Chelmsford's desperate worry was that this force would succumb before he could relieve it. On 29th March 1879, Chelmsford's column crossed the Tugela River and began its march to the relief of Pearson's force. The country was covered by Zulu scouts. Signals flashed by heliograph were received from Pearson's camp at Eshowe. It was clear to Chelmsford that his advance would be fiercely contested, progress further impeded by the terrible weather. On 1st of April 1879, Chelmsford's column reached the royal kraal of Gyngyn-Lovu and lagered for the night. A heavy rain came on. Chelmsford had taken careful note of the lessons from Isandlwana. At every encampment, the wagons were carefully positioned to create an unbroken laager wall, and the troops required to dig sections of trench around the laager. Every camp was rendered fully defensible in case of sudden attack. Chelmsford's chief scout, John Dunn, a pre-war inhabitant of Zululand for many years, scouted across the Nyezana River. Beyond the river, he encountered the Zulu army, some 11,000 warriors. Dunn returned to the British camp and reported to Chelmsford that the Zulus would attack in the morning. Chelmsford's column was lagered on the top of a hill, the sides sloping away in each direction, as good a position as any for the battle. In accordance with the new standing orders, the lager was entrenched in a square. The north face of the square was held by the 3rd Battalion, the 60th Rifles, the west face by the 99th Regiment and the Buffs, the east face by the 91st Highlanders, and the south face by the 57th Regiment. The corners of the square were reinforced by Gatling guns, conventional artillery, and rocket troughs. As the sun rose, irregular horse and infantry pickets patrolled towards the Nyezana River, scouting for the Zulu advance. The British regiments in the camp stood to at 4 a.m. Shortly before 6 a.m., reports came in from the advanced pickets of the Zulu approach. A native soldier pointed to the skyline. "Impi," he declared. The British officers stared at the hilltop for some time before realizing that what they had taken to be a long smudge of vegetation was the mass of the advancing Zulu chest. Zulu skirmishers opened fire from cover as they rushed forward. The first attack was received on the north side of the British entrenchments by the 60th Rifles. One of the newly arrived regiments, the young soldiers of the 60th, found the ordeal of the Zulu attack trying in the extreme, and it took all the leadership of the battalion's officers to keep their troops steady and firing. The Gatling guns at the end of the line provided much-needed support. Under heavy fire from the British line, the Zulu charge faltered and flowed around to the west flank of the square, where the attack was renewed against the 99th Regiment. In the face of the volley firing from the two sides of the square, the Zulu chest finally went to ground in cover. The horns of the Zulu advance rushed around the British position, expecting to find the rear open, as at Isandlwana, only to meet the volley firing of the 91st Highland Regiment and the 57th Regiment. Here too, the Zulus were forced into cover. In the face of the sustained fire from the 91st and 57th, the attack on the rear of the laager ebbed away, and Chelmsford ordered his mounted units out of the square to complete the victory. The mounted attack was premature, and it was some time before the Zulu withdrawal took hold. Soon after 7 a.m., the battle was over and the Zulus in full retreat, pursued by the mounted troops and the native contingent. Large numbers of Zulu warriors were killed in the long pursuit. As at the Battle of Kambula, the Zulus, wounded and found on the battlefield by the British troops, were killed. The Zulu army was effectively dispersed. The outcome of the battle was a great relief to Chelmsford, showing him that his army's confidence was re-established and enabling him to continue his advance to Pearson's camp and on to defeat the Zulu king Cetshwayo at the Battle of Ulundi. British casualties at the Battle of Gingenlovel were 6 officers and 55 men. Among the dead was Lieutenant Colonel Northey of the 60th Rifles. Zulu casualties were calculated at 1,000. That is the end of this podcast on the Battle of Gingenlovel. I hope you have enjoyed it and thank you for listening. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site on the battle, where you will find pictures of the battle and images of the regiments that took part, with a map of the battle. Finally, I would invite you to look at the list of British Battles podcasts on www.britishbattles.com/BritishBattles.com/podcasts.